The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 944. It's the 8th of December 2017. On the podcast today, David Fraser, CEO of Great Western Mining Corporation, that's GWMO ticker, answers private investor questions on their copper, gold, silver project in Mineral County, Nevada. Also on the podcast, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, XTR, discusses their Manika gold project in Mozambique and possible interests elsewhere. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talks about Berkeley Group, that's BKG, and John Lang, who had results out. And as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Fraser, CEO of Great Western Mining, that's GWMO ticker. David, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you for inviting me again, Justin.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of questions here from private investors, and we'll get through those in a bit. Before we do, for people listening right now who are not quite aware of the company or are new to investing, summarise Great Western Mining, if you could, David.
Great Western Mining, we're an Irish PLC. We're listed on the AIM market in London and the ESM in Dublin. We're a copper play. We have a large claim area, 73 square kilometres in Nevada, the USA.
Excellent stuff. So decent jurisdiction there. Let's get into the questions, and because that's often an issue, isn't it? I mean, you know, you can have companies have a great resource somewhere, but you think unstable government, will they ever get it out of there? You know, so yeah. Or it's not accessible in some way. Let's go to question one. Currently, you are doing three drill programs: M4 Discovery, M2 Phase 3, and Shark Tooth Discovery. Can we ask when you expect to complete each of the three? And when can we expect to see an RNS on each? Wow, that's quite detailed.
that's a big question. M4 will be the first to report. And if I can just sort of, the normal caveat is, you know, dependent on weather, dependent on sort of ground conditions. But the current schedule is that we anticipate the M4 drilling to be completed around about end of January, beginning of February, depends a little bit on the startup after Christmas. We generally factor in 4 to 6 weeks for the return of the assay results. For M4, we have commissioned our independent consultant geologist, Don Strachan, to produce a JORC-compliant report. So we think we should be in a position to provide a summary RNS round about the end of March. The M2 Phase 3 drilling and the Shark Tooth drilling, that will happen pretty concurrently. We've mobilised two rigs to the site. One's an RC rig, which will be suitable for the sort of shallower sort of infill type of drilling that we're doing on Phase 3, and a diamond core rig for the deeper drilling that we're planning for Shark Tooth. So we're planning to go to almost 800 metres there. In terms of timing, I think the Phase 3 results will be in first. We should be in a position to provide those beginning of April, and the Shark Tooth will be probably, their results will come in maybe 2 weeks after the Phase 3. So there's your rough timings.
Marvellous stuff. Excellent. Question two. What was the reasoning behind not making the Shark Tooth project the main goal before the other projects, i.e. M1, M4, etc.?
Interesting question, and I presume the question is wondering, you know, why don't we best bet the house on Shark Tooth, because it looks to be a very exciting big target, and you know, we would agree with that in some respects. But I think what I would answer is that at Great Western we try to do things in a systematic way, with sound geology and good geological practice. And even though there was some sort of planar structure suggested for the Shark Tooth running from M2 underneath Bass Mountain all the way to the Smith Mine, it wasn't really until we completed the drilling in 2014, and then, and particularly the two discovery holes, and then the work which we did in the summer of 2015, that we really formulated the geological model for Sharktooth, and by that time we were already very advanced on the M4 exploration target. It's another very large, exciting target, and the company in many respects has been chomping at the bit to drill this ever since it came to the market, but we just didn't have the resources to do it. So M4's drill ready, so we started the permitting process in 2014. It was quite long, and we completed that process in January 2016. And I think what I would say now is that we're really excited to be in the position that we have the opportunity to drill the M4 exploration target and the Sharktooth exploration target. So two very large targets in the same drill program as at the moment. So we think that's a fantastic position for the company to be in.
Yeah. Now, question three is very similar, but I don't know if you want to add anything. It says, if Sharktooth has so much copper, why not drill here first and more than the three of the holes? So is that the same kind of question and answer, really?
I think that's a very similar question. So okay. I sort of reiterate what I've said first. I'd maybe say something on why just the three holes, and why not do more?
Yeah.
What I would say, it's a cost benefit sort of situation, because where we're drilling in Nevada, we're remote, it's mountainous, it's very rugged. So in many respects, we are pushing the boundaries of the equipment and the men involved. So drilling is expensive, and more to the point, drilling, you get charged per foot. So on the Sharktooth, we're drilling quite deep, so we're doing sort of 2,500 odd foot per hole. So each Sharktooth hole is a very significant investment for the company. So the way we like to approach this, we try and be systematic. We prefer to drill the holes, see what's there, and then plan what to do at the next stage. We sort of admit that, okay, yes, more holes would be better, but not at any cost.
Okay, excellent. Okay, what if it's the next question? What is the company's next step once M1, M2, M4, and Sharktooth have been hopefully proved up by the end of March, if everything goes to plan?
So what do we do at the next stage? If I could address the current M2 resource drilling, because in many respects that's the easiest, because we've already started the detailed planning for that stage. So I think if things go to plan, we expect after this drilling that we'll have increased our resource to above 20 million tons of at least 0.52% copper. But the bulk of this is an inferred resource, and we would like to upgrade that to at least measured and indicated. So we are planning an infill drill program in order to achieve that. Mm-hmm. But I think also at the same time, we're sort of aware that the strike is open in pretty much every direction, and but particularly to the south, heading in the direction of M4, because there we can see that the structural horizon extends more than 1,800 meters south of the most southerly bearing copper drill hole currently drilled, and so therefore there is this sort of potential to double or maybe even triple the strike in a southerly direction, and with that sort of increase in strike, we would imagine a sort of similar quantum increase in the resource that we have there, and there's also the potential to increase the potential resource by some step out drilling going down dip towards the Sharktooth, but remaining an open pit opportunity. So we are, this sort of analysis of how to do that, again, in a cost-effective way to increase the quantum of the resource while we're upgrading the classification is a priority work for 2018. With regard to Sharktooth and M4, obviously we need to see what the results are from both those drill programs. before we really decide what to do next. But, you know, these are two very different sort of animals. The shark tooth is an underground opportunity, which would be suitable for block cave mining, whereas M4 and particularly the copper oxides at M4, you know, that's another open pit opportunity. So it may make sense to the company to develop a second open pit, because we are planning to develop the M2 open pit, so we could have two open pits, both supplying a facility situated somewhere between the two. So that might be the first step that we should be taking before we move on to the underground mining on the shark tooth. So all of this we need to see once we've completed this next stage of work.
Excellent stuff. And a similar sort of question with a bit of a spin. What is the plan after M2, M4 and shark tooth have been proved out? Is the company wanting to get results from the other projects, M5, M6, M8, first before attracting a JV or sellout, or looking to see what happens with M2, M4 and shark tooth first?
Right. Did you, another big question.
Yeah. If you can remember all that, yeah.
Yeah. I think what I'd start by saying that the projects mentioned there, you know, the company thinks all of these are really good projects. You know, M8, Conoco did a lot of work on M8 and previously, and we have all that data. Mm-hmm. And the work that we've done, we've identified there already a very good copper oxide target. On M5, the work that we've done there, we found some very widespread sort of Carlin type or, you know, epithermal disseminated gold. And that's been accompanied by some high copper readings in the soil. So, again, that's a very interesting target. And it's also very interesting because it is at the southerly end of a north-south localized fault, which runs between down the Black Mountains from M2 through M4 and, you know, finishing at M5. So we do need to do some more general work so that we understand better the sort of, if you like, the control features of all the mineralization that we're finding. But I think the honest answer was, before we really look for joint venture partners, we'd like to focus on what we've got already. You know, we really want to do some more work and concentrate our resources on upgrading the M2 open pit opportunity to at least measured and indicated, to move away from the pure exploration to more of a development stage. So we'd like to do more metallurgical tests, sort of column tests to find the optimum sort of acid solution and the optimum sort of timing of leaching. And we'd also like to do more work on both shark tooth and M4 and get one or maybe even both of them to some sort of inferred resource stage before we really look to a farming partner and a joint venture partner. It's just trying to develop as much, you know, as much of the value as we can within the company before we go outside to partners to help us bring the projects to, you know, full production sort of level.
Yeah. Okay. No. Our next question is: Do we have any more updates from Crown Point to look forward to regarding any JV we have with them?
Well, yes, the answer would be yes to that. I mean, the next stage here is we need to appoint a mining engineer to prepare a design for the gravity and flotation mill as part of phase one. Obviously, that's something that we need to sit down with Crown Point and discuss. There has been a local candidate, a very well-regarded local candidate, suggested. So we hope that we'll make progress on this in early 2018. We haven't had the conversation yet with Crown Point, but yes, I would imagine there will be, at each stage of the sort of planning process, we will update the market with progress.
Excellent stuff. Do you see us as being undervalued, and what's the company's view on this? I think most CEOs would say yes, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I don't think you'll find very many executives of public companies who say that they think their stock is overvalued. Well, certainly not if they think they want to keep their position. And I don't think you find many who think it's fair value. So, obviously, I would say yes. I think the way I'd like to answer is that, I think we're in a really good position at the moment because, we have a resource and we've identified some really exciting exploration targets. We've got, we're underway on a fully funded drill program where we're expecting an increase in the resource and discoveries on those exploration targets. So if I look at the market cap of the company, we're just under six million at sort of yesterday's closing price. To me, that doesn't seem to be a very demanding sort of rating, given the significant upside potential, that we have. And the other thing I would also say, we own 100% of our projects. So we currently do not have any joint venture partners. So therefore, there's no net smelter agreements that need to be considered. There's no royalties that need to be factored in. And, we're in Nevada. We're in the United States of America. So that's a safe first world jurisdiction, at a time when, the political instability seems to be increasing in the world. And there certainly seems to be an increase in resource nationalism. So I think, the company would certainly take the view that we do not believe that we receive full credit for the very favourable risk-reward profile that the company has.
Yeah, and last question. Get your crystal ball out, David. Here we go. What sort of position would the company like to see itself in? In fact, you don't need a crystal ball. So saying that, you could say anything, but where would you like to be in 3, 6, and 9 months?
Three, six, and nine. Yeah. Well, 3 months will still be drilling. So if I take the sort of 6 to 9 months, I'd like to say we'll have successfully completed the current program. So we will have an increase in our resource to over 20 million tonnes of 0.52% copper. And we will be at the final stages of preparing the infill drill program to upgrade that to measured and indicated. We'll have a couple of discoveries on our exploration targets on Shark Tooth and also M4, and I would really hope that the market would be starting to wake up to the really favorable sort of upside potential that our projects in Nevada have, and hopefully that would mean that that would be recognized in the share price.
Yeah, well, listen, if someone's listening to this and like the where you're at and what you're doing but are not yet following the story, David, on Vox Markets, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Yes, I think, well, first of all, we're a copper play, and we certainly believe copper is a commodity which is a good commodity to be involved in the current market. Demand is expected to outstrip supply, by 2020. It's heavily involved in the sort of renewable sector, four times as much copper in a car, electric car, as in a petrol car, and so forth. Second, I've just sort of mentioned, we're in a very safe jurisdiction at an uncertain time. So we're in Nevada in the United States. So that's a tier one mining friendly jurisdiction in a very safe country ruled by law. And then finally, timing. We're underway in a significant drill program where we're drilling on three of our targets. So we expect some good news in the next sort of few months, upgrading our resource, and we're also expecting the possibility of exciting discoveries on the two exploration targets which we're also drilling at the same time. So timing is very good to be involved in Great Western Mining.
Yeah, and like you say, in America, with Trump there at the moment, there's no way he's getting back on mining. So it's he's very mine-friendly, isn't he,
Well, he is. He is mining-friendly. I think he brings the focus back. I think Trump is one of those things that he's highlighted the maybe the opportunities for the sector rather than anything specifically for us. So, you know, let's see how it all develops. But I think we're in a good position.
Excellent, David. Good chat to you. And like I said, you've got a busy period ahead of you. So no doubt we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. That's XTR ticker. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
It's nice to get you on. We've had quite a few requests, in fact, over the last couple of years to get someone from Extract Resources on. And I've had people asking me already if you're coming on of late. So it's nice to get you on. Now, that's obviously for shareholders who know about the company. For people not aware of Extract Resources, Colin, give a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please.
Well, a thumbnail says that we're in Manica. Mm-hmm. We're a gold producer and explorer. But I think the emphasis on the word producer. We're currently producing from our alluvials. And we have a relatively large hard rock property called Fairbride within the Manica of Mozambique region. And that's got a definitive feasibility study, 35,000 ounces for 7 years. And it can be grown in all directions and with the possibility of going underground, obviously gold price dependent. So really Mozambique, Manica area, which is close to Zimbabwe and prolific gold mining, currently producing income. That income is expected to grow with hard rock possibilities and peripheral opportunities, which will add to the key position. Gold producer on the AIM market. That's our summary.
Marvellous stuff. And you've been quite busy of late. Two bits of news out this week from the sort of enhanced terms, the Manica Western Alluvial Concession and the Manica Concession Alluvial Gold Update. So take us through some of the detail in this bits of news, if you could, Colin. And is there any more to come?
Well, let's start with the news. And, I sit on the bulletin boards, but it's sort of been accepted in different ways. But the reality of life, the Manica concession is very big. Mm-hmm. So big that we divided it into two parts with a view to subcontracting it to establish contractors and taking a royalty. And so on the eastern side, we have a Chinese group called the Sino Minerals. They're up and away and running very well. Mm-hmm. And on the western side, we had a consortium between Mosgold, a South African diamond alluvial worker, and Omnia, which is an established operator in the Manica region, been there for a number of years. So we announced that we'd be starting about 3 or 4 months ago, and we did, and we have. And we produced our figures, and we told the market how much gold that we had got to take down to South Africa for refining. And then we announced a couple of days ago that in the western side, that Omnia and Mosgold at East decided to take half of the ARF, a quarter each. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess that people might think, well, that's obviously reduced the size for both parties. What's in it for them? Mm-hmm. But the east side of east and west of the Manica concession, we were talking 9 to 12 years of life. So in actual fact, by dividing quarter and quarter, we increase our production overall, and we satisfy the objective of Omnia being able to utilize their plant. They've got a well-established plant, and that's underutilized. So they were quite keen to actually get more alluvials into their plant. And on the other side, on the other half, Mosgold were actually quite happy to be independent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to upset anyone, three-way relationships are a lot more difficult to manage than the distinct relationships which have emerged, i.e. Omnia on their own, feeding the plant, which is well established, and the Mosgold Group building up their own plant, and Sino Minerals working away on the east. So I think, well, I'm delighted with the conclusion because obviously it amounts to more gold in a shorter time. And, you know, those gold figures, they're significant. We talk about our 35,000 ounces of gold coming out of the hard rock when we developed the hard rock. But the combined monthly ounces coming from these three alluvials should get us well above 20. Well, get the, you know, the total amounts produced from the alluvials to well above 20,000 ounces per year, and monthly output similar from what we anticipate from the hard rock. And the hard rock's going to cost us, as we said in the DFS, some $35 million. So here we go. We're getting a share. We're getting a share in what's happening now at no risk to ourselves. And we're quietly working away on getting the hard rock situation fully evaluated and financed. So is there more to come, you ask me?
Yeah.
Well, the real opportunity, and the DFS speaks for itself, that kicked off the alluvials. We need to strip those alluvials to work the hard rock. But I'm convinced that all around us is this significant opportunity. Omnia, as I said, the group who are on the extreme west of the alluvials, they've got a great hard rock plant, which they'd love to bring into production. I've been there and looked at the hard rock potential, and I've currently got a geologist there now. We're having a good look at that, and we're talking to Omnia about how we might collaborate. Because, you know, as I said earlier, we've got to bring an hard rock into hard rock mine into production. Do we really want to build a new plant, or might it be smart to do something with Omnia with their plant, extend it, and do some sort of, you know, which is popular in South Africa, some sort of pool and share agreement. So that's a real opportunity.
Yeah,
you go over the mountain and you see hard rock, you see veins, you see obvious evidence of previous work in artisanal and real potential again. We're talking there. We have two more concessions which have got some alluvials on them. Are those a little bit further away from the river? Will they pay? Won't they pay? Again, we're investigating. And, you know, we had that placing which was much... not everyone was happy with the recent placing I did, but boy, has that put us in a position to achieve the consolidation I'm talking about? And, you know, there's a fundamental question to be asked here. Does Extract really want to receive royalties when they own the concession? Might there be an opportunity for some involvement in one of the with one of the alluvial producers? Might it be smart to take some equity? Those things are being looked at. So you ask me what's around the corner. There is a lot around the corner. And one shouldn't forget, I mentioned earlier in the introduction, that prolific gold mining over the border in Zimbabwe. Prolific is small, but over the years I've often said that it's so strange that Zimbabwe's on the border of South Africa. Zimbabwe's a small gold mining industry and other mining industry, whilst over the border in South Africa everything's big. Mm-hmm. Lot of opportunities to consolidate in Zimbabwe. Good ground, which has been pursued for the underground model, which may have great surface potential. I'm pretty active over there now. Obviously, one's not going to commit too much shareholder money. We've only the president has only just been changed. One's waiting to see what the new president might or might not do. But early days, and I for one think it's time to position over the border, because let's face it, from a management issue, to go through the border and look at your properties and supervise whatever you are exploring or developing is almost, it's akin to developing the Manika project and the greenstones that extend into Zimbabwe. So yes, a lot happening. Hopefully a lot of news flow, consolidation, possible equity positions, possible growth, increase in production. Our contractor's independent. To me, it's all good news, and I'm waiting for the new year, and hopefully giving our shareholders a good significant production month on month. And remember, again, you know, my early comment that everybody says, when's the hard rock starting? But you get the cumulative ounces from those three contractor situations. We don't own all the ounces, but we've got a risk-free revenue stream. Seems to me that it's a great start point. So, Justin, okay. in no small way, and I've tried to do it as quick as I can, sums up what we're up to, what the news flow might be, and the opportunities in Manica, and obviously spreading through the Greenstone belt into Zimbabwe and further towards Harare.
Okay, excellent, Colin. There's a lot of detail there, but in sort of one word, as far as the next sort of milestone is concerned, what are you looking to achieve?
It has to be earnings growth.
Okay.
The rest can come, but earnings growth is what we're about to extract.
Excellent stuff. Okay, come on, if someone's listening to this and they like the sound of what you're doing, your ambition here and where you're looking, but are not yet following the story on Vox Markets, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Well, you know, as CEO, I've said it, earnings growth, watch out for that earnings growth. Consolidation, watch out for that consolidation. Other opportunities being developed, hard rock coming into production, probable extensions into the mining areas, watch out for that news. Because the three bits of news together amounts to an emerging company in the gold space growing rapidly. That's what they should be watching for. Monitor the company. Watch it happening. Be part of it happening.
Excellent stuff. Colin, good to chat to you. And like you said, you've got a lot going on. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that. Thanks for your time and thanks for the opportunity. Thank you very much. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. Chris, how are you doing, fella?
Hello. Yes, very well. Thank you. Very well. On this cold, cold morning, my goodness. Thank goodness it's 2 weeks to Christmas. We haven't got the snow yet, but I'm told it's not too far off.
Yeah, well, you're missing the point, Graham. Listen, when I get up, I'm tweeting very early. I do an hour on the treadmill sort of thing. I'm just walking, pretty much speed walking, because my knees don't take running anymore. And I do a bit of weights after. But I get on my Twitter platform there, you're one of the few people I know who up and tweeting at that time. And so we both saw the sort of breaking news earlier on. I mean, up with us as well, but not tweeting, was Theresa May and David Davis. They're in Brussels by about 6 o'clock, I think, this morning, weren't they? And
that's right.
And so they did that to sort of. What is the deal they've said here? They've agreed on Northern Ireland. Is that right?
Well, ish. Ish, I think, is the right phrase. And obviously, we're trying to react to something which is being reacted to at the moment. But here's how I understand it. Look, I think the Irish Prime Minister said it correctly. It's the end of the beginning. It's not the beginning of the end. This just allows more chats to happen over the next few weeks. There's obviously a big shindig happening next week that's been planned for a while. So there's been a little bit of progress. And how this plays out into financial markets is as follows. Look, the pound's up a touch. And obviously, we've seen, if you look over 2017 overall, the pound has made a bit of progress against the dollar after a shabby old 2016. We know the euro's been even stronger. So there's been sort of British exporters. It's been a little bit tougher in the States, but it's actually been a little bit easier in Europe. But I think really where this plays into is just people's confidence about the Brexit process. You know, I kind of liken Brexit a bit this year to being one step forward, one step back, with the occasional kind of two steps forward or one step back move sort of thrown in. And that's what we've had today. We've had a two steps forward and maybe there's one step back next week, but it's inching towards compromises, which ultimately mean if you look at the very out of favour UK domestic shares, retailers, financial companies, banks, etc., there are opportunities. And this year it's been all about trading them. You know, names, we've talked about names such as Next and Kingfisher and related. If you've traded them, taken a few quid here and there, you've done okay. You don't need to hold them, sort of buy and hold forever. You know, the correct attitude is to trade them at the moment. And I think that's still consistent with what is still a highly uncertain situation, but it's sort of inching in the right direction from the sense that compromises mean sort of a backdrop which allows British business to be thinking about investing and employing people and exporting or whatever with confidence. So we'll see, Justin. Frankly, let's face it, it's a mess. It's a mess at too many levels to think about, but it's inching forward to something which ultimately might be a just about workable compromise.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, let's macro, we could talk about that forever, but we'd get nowhere.
Precisely.
Let's get into micro a bit. Any companies releasing today, Chris?
Look, house builders are kind of interesting. You and I have talked about them a number of times. I've opined that I think they're rolling over. I think they're rolling over because the property market is tougher. You know, not wildly disassociated with what we've just been talking about, Brexit and macro uncertainty, but also the fact that they've got numbers and metrics which aren't perhaps quite as compelling as they used to be. Barclay Homes, though, have just come up with some numbers this morning. I have to say, the share price reaction surprises me. Shares up 8%. Look, there was nothing wrong with the numbers at all. If you look at things like the NAV progression, the profit progression, the cash generated, ticks in the boxes all along. However, they made a really interesting observation, and certainly my interpretation would be this sort of observation should be uppermost in investors' mind at the moment in the sector. They said that profitability this year was the peak, and next year it will be, I think they refer to it as a bit more normal. So they've kind of gone from a peak brilliant year, they're going to a normal year. Now, normally the stock market looks forward and it says, okay, guys, you know, it's all about what you're going to do in profitability next year or maybe even the year after. So kind of interested in the reaction. Sure, the company's been very dedicated to things like returning cash to shareholders, and they reiterated that today. They even slightly edged up some hopes on that. And maybe that's why the share is up. But I have to say, if I'm looking at the house builders generally, and I looked at some of the other charts as well, things like Taylor Wimpey, slightly more mainstream house builders. I have to say they've had a funny old year. Barclay looks anomalous. It's had a fantastic year in terms of the share price. It's breaking up to new highs as we speak, but I'm cautious. I have to say, from a macro and a micro perspective, I'll be taking profits here if you've got profits to be taking.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yes, it's a big game for big stock, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, look, and also they're quite London-centric. But as I say, I think the power of we're doing great on the returning cash to shareholders, that's all in line and on plan, versus profits of sort of this is the big year and next year is a bit more normal, i.e. lower. It's the former has taken the weight of people's thoughts and expectations and reaction function rather than the fear factor today.
Marvel stuff. Anything else there?
A quick final one on John Laing. Look, John Laing, JLG is the ticker. JLG, not well known. It's obviously an infrastructure company. It invests in wind farms and road building projects and sort of rail ticketing systems and stuff like that. All sort of important infrastructure elements all around the world. Infrastructure funds have had a very good few years. John Laing, interestingly, the shares have rolled over quite clearly this year, and I observed that they're currently trading a little bit below book value, which is slightly unusual, certainly compared to recent years. The comments today were perfectly fine. Two observations. The first, they said that they were investing more money than they thought, just because they keep on finding projects that they like in the areas energy, road, rail, etc., all around the world. They are still seeing decent realizations, i.e. projects maturing, they sell their stakes, etc. But they were sort of, when I read through the statement, I thought they mentioned a special dividend capability, but they said it all depends on the balance between investments and realizations and stuff like that. Bottom line is, in a week where we've seen obviously some pretty eye-catching property deals, things like Hammerson Into, I must admit, when I saw that, I thought to myself, crikey, you know, bulking up in an area like shopping centres, which is not exactly necessarily offering huge growth potential. Mm. I thought actually John Laing, infrastructure is essential, important. Seeing them trading below book, I'd much rather buy them below book than a bunch of sort of listed property stocks, which are exposed to things like the retail economy and all other stuff, which are also still trading below book as well, given a choice. So for the sort of the medium term investor looking for something a little bit different into 18, take a look at John Laing, below book and making all the right noises about opportunities they're seeing, and I assume as well potential returns from those investments over time. Infrastructure is essential, let's face it, for all countries around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris, have a nice weekend, fella. And in fact, I'm not here next week, so I won't speak next week. But
we can speak from the beach or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
If the sand gets in the computer, it's not going to work, though, is it? So, so there you go. We'll speak anon. Hopefully, before Santa Claus even comes along.
Yeah, who knows? Yes. Yeah, Chris. Have a nice week. Speak the week after next, maybe the new year. Who knows yet?
Who knows? Keep it light. See you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Physiomics, PYC. At four, Lions Gold, Lion. At three, Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO. At two, Tertiary Minerals, TYM. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets, no surprise really to me, it's risen strongly the last couple of days, Valerix. That's V-A-X. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Vela Technologies. That's V-E-L-A. Proposed investment. It's in blockchain. That's why it's flying. Everything that touches blockchain flies. Angle PLC. That's Parsortics Potential in Metastatic Breast Cancer. At three, Nostratera Oil and Gas yesterday afternoon. Pine Mills significant increase in reserves. At two, Thor Mining. Option agreement to acquire Pilbara Project. And number one, most liked RNS, but the share price is falling strongly today on this. So maybe people who hold the stock are liking it, but other people are not liking it. It's down 16.9% as I look. It's from Empyrean Energy, EME, Dempsey, 115 Well, production update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.